We're into our third and final hour. Welcome back. A tremendous Friday to you. I am in Southern California. I am Jim Rome, and I am coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. All right, so we start hour number three. I've got Alvin's Week That Was coming up later on this hour. I've got your phone calls coming up later on this hour. But we start the hour by having a conversation with a good friend of the program. He is a reporter and a storyteller for NFL Media. He is a Hall of Fame voter. He is author of Junior Seau, The Life and Death of a Football Icon. He is also the co-host of the new podcast, Huddle and Flow. He is Jim Trotter. My man, what's going on, Jim? How are you?
I'm great, Romy. How you doing, man?
Good, good. Great to have you back, Jim. Before I talk to you about football, I do want to ask you, though. I saw you on the golf course yesterday, and you had, Jim, what looked like a vulture hanging out at the tee box with you. How did that go, and how did your round end up going?
It was a turkey vulture who had just, caught its dinner for the evening. And let's just say I left the tee box to the turkey vulture. I was not going to intrude. And my round went well. I mean, I had as many birdies as triples. So for me, that's a good day. So no complaint.
Good to hear it. Jim Trotter, my guest. All right, Jim, I want to get into the details of Russell Wilson and his situation. But before we break that thing down, what do you make of the dynamic right now between the quarterback and the franchise?
You know, Jim, for me, it's not surprising at all. Pete has created a culture up there from the very beginning where he wanted his players to be able to speak their minds. And to me, this is no exception. So it's just that it's taken Russell this long to finally come out and say it publicly. So I'm not surprised at all by this. And in fact, if anything surprises me is that it took this long for Russell to say what he's feeling about the situation.
We're talking to Jim Trotter. So, Jim, what about the situation? You've got Pete Carroll, of course, who's all about a strong running game and a nasty defense, and the sense has been for a while that Russ would like to throw the ball some more and have a little more to say on what's going on with the offense. So how does that play out? I mean, can the two of these guys coexist with these two divergent viewpoints? How will it go?
I think at some point it's going to come to a head, and I think one of them ends up moving on. The reason that I'm not surprised by this, or the thing that has surprised me to some degree, is that I remember having a conversation with Pete Carroll some time ago where he talked about his experience at USC. And he talked about the year that Carson Palmer won the Heisman Trophy, and the team finished 500, I believe. And Pete said at that point he never again wanted to have a team that was so dependent on the quarterback that it ended up impacting the final outcome of the team. And so when you saw these things going on with Russell Wilson, and even last year, the first half of the season, where they were throwing the ball like crazy, and Russell was putting up crazy numbers and was in the MVP conversation, I just kept thinking to myself, man, this isn't the Pete Carroll offense or team that I know that he desires. So over the second half of the season, as outlined in that terrific The Athletic piece that was written about this, it indicated all those things that this was not the offense that Pete desires. It was not the style of football that Pete desires. And that's why I say I think it's going to come to a head at some point, because Russell is thinking legacy. Pete is thinking victories and formula and process and all of that. And right now the two of those things don't jive. Russell looks at what's going on with Tom Brady, what, you know, Drew Brees has done, what Peyton Manning did, all of that. And he wants his name to be in that group, and he wants it to be prominently in that group. And one of the ways he believes to do that is by putting up numbers that are insane. And that's why I say I just don't think this thing is going to last long term.
We're talking to Jim Trotter. So, Jim, if it comes down to that, and it's a matter of picking one guy or the other, who's going to win that battle?
That's an interesting question. Look, we all know it's a quarterback-driven league, but Pete has taken teams to two Super Bowls. And what kind of cachet does that give him there? It's interesting, Jim, that the closer you are to Seattle, people believe that it will be Pete who will win that battle. The further away you are from Seattle, the more people think Russell Wilson will win that battle. So I don't know that I have the answer for you on that. I just think that it depends on at what point this thing plays itself out. I do know, or I do believe, I should say, that if Seattle is able to come up with another quarterback that it believes it can win with, then I would say that Pete wins that. If the franchise can't come up with another quarterback, then the odds would have to shift towards Russell.
We're talking to Jim Trotter. You know, Jim, last summer you did a piece for NFL.com where you spoke to a player at each position and you asked them the three most important qualities of a successful NFL head coach. Richard Sherman told you, quote, Pete has his compete philosophy. He's got a whole psychological aspect that he goes through with, and he's got a routine that he goes through and puts his players through. So what do you make of that? And does Pete's approach get old and wear on guys after a while?
Sure, I think it wears on them to some degree where they feel like what he's saying is not actually what's happening. And for years now, there have been folks who have believed, even Richard, back to his time in Seattle, that Russell was treated differently than everyone else, that Pete was not as hard on Russell as he was on other players, particularly in team meetings. So I think that's what plays on players more than just the message of always compete. And the question becomes, is he being sincere to that message if he's being softer on some guys than others? So from that standpoint, you know, what Richard said, it's true. And, you know, Pete had, look, it's interesting now that we are hearing him come out and speak more definitively about Russell or any flaws that he sees than we've heard at any point during Russell's career. And I think part of that is Russell understanding his position in this league, understanding his talents, his ability, and understanding his power. And one of the things that we are seeing from NFL players today, more of them are being willing to flex their muscle because they are understanding or believing that they do have power. And for a long time in this league, I don't think players believe that, but we've seen that shift over the last 5 to 10 years where I think players are coming into their own in terms of understanding what their power is in this league and what their leverage is in this league.
I think you're right. I think it's a very good point. Jim Trotter is joining us. Jim, something else about that piece that jumps out is the note about Pete and his sons, Brennan and Nate, who were both on the staff at one point before Brennan took a job at the University of Arizona. In a way, it seems unusual, but in the NFL, it really isn't. How concerned then is the league about nepotism and cronyism among coaches?
I don't know how concerned the league is about it. I can tell you that black coaches or minority coaches are concerned about it. Because the reality is right now, Jim, I just got some data this morning, and it's league data, so it's not my reporting from that standpoint. But what it said is that there are 73 coaches in the NFL who are either related to an active or former NFL coach. And of those 73, 55 are white, which some might expect that number to be a little higher. But where it becomes an issue is the feeling is that those hires, nepotism hires, are jumping to the front of the line in terms of getting to positions that typically lead to head coaching opportunities. And so that's a problem. Right now, 10 of the 32 head coaches in the NFL are either the sons, fathers, or brothers of someone who was a former NFL coach. And so from that standpoint, and talking to minority coaches, they feel that nepotism is a huge problem in the NFL at this point as it relates to the advancement of people of color.
We're talking to Jim Trotter. So, Jim, also earlier this week, you had a piece for NFL.com that discussed the fact that in 2020, there were a record number of African-American quarterbacks. There was not a lot of hype around that, despite the history of race being a factor in evaluating quarterbacks. So how would you describe the role that race plays in evaluating quarterbacks now as compared to the past?
Oh, you know, Jim, with that piece, what it was, the way it came about is on our podcast, we were talking to Doug Williams. In week two, prior to the games on that Sunday in week two. And Doug said, do you guys realize that there are four games in which there are head-to-head matchups between quarterbacks who are black? And neither Steve Weiss, my co-host, nor I had even thought about it. And for Doug, it was significant because you have to remember, Doug, back in 1979, when he faced off against Viz Evans, it was the first time in league history that two black quarterbacks had met head-to-head in the NFL as starters. And so for Doug, this was a significant moment. And so I said, I want to reach out to people who were impacted by race at that position historically, whether that goes back to Jimmy Ray, to Sherm Lewis, to Warren Moon, and then to some other guys, Byron Leftwich, Tony Dungy, who had to change positions coming out of college, and just ask them the question of whether or not we have moved past the point of race being a factor in the evaluation of NFL quarterbacks. And to a man, they all agree that progress has been made, but they could not all say that it is no longer a factor. And one of the points that they made is the fact that we still identify quarterbacks by race. We will say, you know, a black quarterback. And they said, until we get past that point, then no, we haven't completely crossed the finish line as it relates to the evaluation. And we're even seeing that in the draft process this year again, when you read some of the code language that's being used for a player like Justin Fields. Bucky Brooks spoke to that in my article. So have we moved past it completely? No. Have we made progress? Yes.
My guest is Jim Trotter. Now, speaking of your podcast, Jim, recently you had Terry Fontenot on. What did you take away from that conversation with him, especially when it comes to how he's approaching the offseason with the Falcons?
That they're open for business with that fourth pick in the draft. You know, if they have to use it, they will. But if they can find an offer that allows them to move down and get, you know, more picks and supplement that roster, or if there's something there, the player that they believe they really want, and there's an opportunity to move up, it's in play. You know, Terry is the type of guy, he's not going to show his cards. One of the things he will tell you is that he listens to every interview that's done. He reads every story because he said people around the NFL have loose lips and you can gain a lot of information from that. So he wasn't going to tell us much, particularly when I pressed him and said, are there any untouchables on your roster? And he basically wouldn't answer that. He danced around it. So from my standpoint, Terry Fontenot, I think, is going to be tremendous as a GM. He's so smart. He works hard. And he's thoughtful in terms of his approach to things. So I'm really interested to see how ultimately that is going to play out in Atlanta, because I do think he's one of the bright minds in the game.
I'm talking to Jim Trotter for a few more moments. Jim, what about the Texans situation and Deshaun Watson? He's made it pretty clear, this is not where I want to be. I'm not going to play for a new head coach, and this is not handled well. I mean, he's in a really, really unhappy place, it would appear. How do you think that plays out?
I think at this point they're going to test him. I think it's a game of chicken, and they're going to see just how serious he is about not wanting to be there. Look, part of the reason during the interview process, they made it clear to the candidates that they wanted to retain Tim Kelly as their offensive coordinator, which they did. And part of the reason for that is, my understanding from talking to people, is they believe that this situation with Deshaun could drag out until even week one. And they felt that if he came back in week one, they wanted to have an offensive system and a play caller in place that Deshaun was comfortable with, and that's Tim Kelly. Deshaun had his best season under Tim. So from that standpoint, that's what they've done. Having done that, I believe they're going to play this out, and I don't think they're going to trade him. Teams that I've talked to that have at least made the call to Houston to inquire about whether or not the Texans are willing to move Deshaun have gotten a firm no, if they've gotten an answer at all, you know, gotten their call returned. So from that standpoint, at this point, I expect Deshaun to be back in Houston. And look, we know this, Romy, based on history in this league. Deadlines spur action. And when players start to lose money, that's when we find out what they're really all about or how strong their convictions are. And I think the Texans are willing to test that with Deshaun.
So obviously you don't want to have an unhappy player. If they don't move him, and he's always been the ultimate soldier and team guy, what kind of a mindset and headspace would he be in if they don't move him and he does have to show up?
I'm betting not good. I mean, in stating the obvious. But I will say this to you, too. Since when do teams care about a player's mental mindset in many cases? You know, I do believe this, and I don't have any evidence of this, so hear me out on that. But I do believe there are owners in the league that are saying at this point, look, these players are getting a little too full of themselves. They're starting to feel that they have too much power. And I would not be surprised at all if there have been owners who have said to Cal McNair in Houston, look, you need to get a hold of this because we need to get these players under control and not give them that perception or belief that they have more power than what they do. I have no proof of that. I just believe that based on the history of this league and the way things work. And I would not be surprised if those conversations have taken place with Cal McNair.
Yeah, I would not doubt that either, Jim. Now, when I see you on video these days, you look like a million. How is the Peloton treating you, and what is the secret, my man?
Romy, actually, I've gotten too skinny on this thing. I'm down 25 pounds,
wow,
three pant sizes, and I'm actually trying now to put a little weight on, or muscle mass, if you will. I stopped lifting and all of that and just started riding the bike and doing core work, which is great. It got some of the weight off and all of that. But the problem is now I'm too skinny. And, you know, I feel like I'm wearing my father's suits when I put on my old clothes. So I had to go out and buy some new clothes. And, you know, that gets expensive. So I'm just trying to find a happy medium at this point. But this is the life of the pandemic. I haven't traveled. Next month will be exactly 1 year that I have not gotten on a plane or gone anywhere. And for the most part, you know, it's been stay at home, ride the bike, do some core work, that sort of stuff. And try and find an escape from the madness that's going on.
Man, that is the pandemic life right there, summed up perfectly. He is a reporter and a storyteller for NFL Media. He is a Hall of Fame voter and the author of Junior Seau, The Life and Death of a Football Icon. Also, check out that great podcast, Huddle and Flow. Jim, great to have you on. Appreciate you, as always. Thank you very much.
Romy, always a pleasure, man. Look forward to it.
Me too, Jim. Thanks. Great talking to you. Great job by Jim Trotter. And what he says about Deshaun Watson, I think is true. I mean, Watson does not want to be there. This is clear. He does not want to be there. But deadlines do spur action, and guys do not want to lose money. And if they're not going to move him, and they start to fine him, and it costs him game checks, I don't think it comes to that. I don't think he's going to be happy, but I don't think that he would sit out the entire year to get what he wants. When we come back, we are open the rest of the way. I'm looking for telephone calls. 1-800-636-8686. Those phone lines are open right now. And you can also hit me up on Twitter, like this guy, Romesworth. Voicemails are unbecoming. It is more appropriate to leave your message with the person's secretary. Thank you. Beauregard in Pacific Palisades. Hey, Rome, you never took Pat O'Brien up on his offer to play poker. No way. Regards, Robert Plant.
Hey, well, look, I know that it's probably not going to happen, but you're more than welcome to come along and see what we do. It's great fun, and I can tell you some great stories off microphone, which will really make you laugh.
One of my all-time regrets. I mean, nobody wants to die with regret, right? One of my all-time regrets. Robert Plant appeared on this program and invited me to a show so he could tell me stories that we could never say on the air. To which I responded to myself, no, I'm good. I'm sure there'll be another opportunity to hang out with Robert Plant. I'm really not feeling it this week. Incredibly enough, I never talked to him ever again, and he never invited me to another show ever again. Let that be a lesson to all of us. If something comes up, man, seize that moment, because you're not going to get that moment again. Robert Plant invited me to a concert that he was performing in on my show. And I'm like, nah, I'm good, Bobby. It's all good. Except it's not. Take a short time out. Phone call is coming up. Also, Alvy's week that was before the end of the hour.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Listen up, not all beef jerky is the same. Old Trapper is better for you. Higher in essential protein than chips, sugar-filled energy bars, and candy. Ask for Old Trapper by name because no other jerky compares to Old Trapper with your beef. All right, so let me pick up a topic here. Jim Trotter just said he had not been on an airplane and not traveled in an entire year. So it's weird, right? Like, I had not been on an airplane since last summer before I went to Tampa, and it's just really different, and it's weird. And, you know, on some level, I definitely miss it. And I'm not a guy that traveled. I mean, I travel a fair amount, but not a ton. I'm not one of those guys who would get on an airplane every single week. During the NFL season, you know, every other week, every couple of weeks for the NFL Today on CBS before the pandemic. But, you know, there are many people who are always on an airplane. So to go an entire year without doing so is really pretty interesting. So let me just pick that up right there. Let's talk about the sky for a minute. The sky, because the sky and the things that travel through the sky are, in fact, news today, and for good reason. Going back to what Jim Trotter said, there's this crazy poll from CNBC. CNBC talked to 1,000 frequent international flyers this week about all the travel restrictions that have coincided with the pandemic. So there's a lot of people who have logged lots of airtime jet-setting across the world for business and leisure, and they can't do so now because foreign travel is banned. And it's been like that for close to a year. Turns out these aviation addicts are jonesing hard to get back to their wheels-up lifestyle ASAP. You know, there's that group of people that will never be comfortable flying, and now we come to find out there's a group that's not comfortable not flying. 80% of those polled said that travel is part of a well-rounded life. Not exercise, not good diet, not family, not balance. Travel. 80% of them said that travel is part of a well-rounded life. 50% said they would actually give up their job if it meant flying internationally again. They'd walk away from their gig to get on an international flight. 40% said they'd give up sex for an entire year if they could get on a bird out of the country right now. Right? Kind of a weird poll, right? Kind of a bizarre poll. And I'm not even sure what to make of it. Like, I've known one or two people that literally would get on a plane and fly to crazy places, you know, overseas, the Far East, just because they like doing it. They like getting on the plane. And they wouldn't even stay that long. Like, literally, they want to be in the air. So it's not that unusual until you get to the other parts of it. I mean, there are people that are straight-up junkies, straight-up addicts for air travel. And not being on the inside of an airplane is killing them right now. It kind of seems like the very definition of first world problems, right? To be beaten down by not being able to get up 30,000 feet. You got a lot of people who are clinically depressed right now because they lost their job. Yet 50% of these people say they would literally walk away from their job if they could get on a plane outbound from the States. And 40% say they would stop shagging if it meant putting a tray table in its upright and locked position. The hell you would. Sure you wouldn't. This is why hypotheticals are so dumb, because they're just that. They're hypotheticals. But put some respect on sex's name, won't you? It's the only undefeated, untied, unmatched, undisputed heavyweight champion of the world. No one's turning it down. Not even the weirdest aerophiles in this path of 1,000 psychopaths. Honestly, I don't know what's more bizarre to me. The results of that poll, or the fact that CNBC knew to even conduct that poll. Like, I've known one or two people like that, but who knew that there was a group of people so addicted to international travel that they would trade in their job and their wrestling just to do it again right now? Yo, get help. Get help. Not flying internationally should not be this big of a problem. It should be a minor inconvenience, a major privilege that you can easily deal with. You should not be quitting your job and sex in order to get that Jones fixed or filled. Now, one more thing. Let me keep it in the cockpit. Check out this audio. This is startling audio from an American Airlines pilot flying from Cincinnati to Phoenix this past weekend. Check out this audio.
We just had something go right over the top of us that, I hate to say this, looked like a long cylindrical object. It almost looked like a cruise missile type of thing moving really fast that went right over the top of us.
All right, so that's a commercial pilot to the radio control tower saying, "Do you have any targets up here? We just had something go right over the top of us. I hate to say this, but it looked like a long cylindrical object that almost looked like a cruise missile moving really fast that went over the top of us." All right, that's not some wacko in the desert. That's a commercial pilot saying, "I just saw this thing, and I'm not sure what that thing was." That's pretty unnerving. And no, clones, that is not a green light for you to say that that cylindrical object that looked like a cruise missile was actually Greg Norman. All right, so if it wasn't that, the hell was it? What exactly was that? I think it's safe to say that when you see something in the sky that should not be there, you can boil it down to one of three things, or to three things overall. It's either A, a cruise missile, B, a UFO, or C, it's Elon Musk. Honestly, I would rather see aliens or a cruise missile flying over my commercial flight than anything built by Musk. Because chances are Musk is going to crash that rocket right into any bird, probably mine, and kill everybody involved. And then get a tax break and make billions of free dollars in the process. Once again, UFOs are a topic of conversation in the U.S. because the FBI has confirmed that they are now investigating the matter. Unclear if Fox Mulder and Dana Scully are on the case. But what is clear is this country's mind is growing more and more open to this notion of UFOs. Tom DeLonge of Blink-182 had his UFO videos confirmed by the U.S. government last year. Kenyon Drake told me this week, we are not alone. My man, my author, my buddy, Ben Mezrek, echoed those sentiments on this show back in 2020. And now the FBI is investigating an unidentified flying object that almost took out a commercial jet this week. I don't know what it is, but to borrow from the aforementioned Fox Mulder, I do know this. The truth is out there. A little unsettling. I mean, bad enough that the pilots are napping it out on the job. But when your pilot is calling into the control tower saying, do you have targets up here? Saying, I don't know what the hell I just saw, but I saw something. Did you put that thing here? Do you have targets up here? Did you just send a cruise missile in our direction? Or is that an alien? Or is Musk out here doing Musk things? The hell was that I just saw? That's a little unsettling. And nobody knows. And the FBI is involved. And the FBI acknowledges that it's involved. Or when you ask the question, you're told, yeah, check that out with the FBI. We have no say on that. We have nothing to say about that. Ray in SA tweets, hey, Rome, is that pilot sure that it was not Sam Cassell? Yeah, I think he's pretty sure about that. You keep Sam Cassell's name out your mouth. Man, people are getting more and more open about talking about it, too. Even authorities are getting more and more open to talking about it by at least acknowledging it and not trying to bury it. All right, when we come back, Alvin's Week That Was, next segment. Phone lines are still open. I want to finish the thought also, if I can, on Adrian Gonzalez and him saying the game is so different right now that there'd be no place for one of his favorite teammates ever, David Eckstein. All of that is still ahead. Every line is lit. I like that. It is time to answer your Ask the Pros question. Of course, you submit it to me, and it's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Master Jim, when grilling, gas or charcoal? War, hype over hate, Schaefer in Buffalo. My man, that's a trick question. I know what's going to happen here. I'm going to answer it honestly and get on the wrong side of Charcoal Nation. To me, that's a no-brainer. Gas all day long. Hey, I know charcoal guy. I'm not getting the actual experience. I'm not getting the best flavor. I guess not. But you know what? I'm willing to trade all that for being able to push a button and be ready to go. Like in under 5 minutes. As opposed to building the perfect charcoal pyramid and then dousing it with lighter fluid, and then waiting for the embers to go out 9 hours later and worrying about burning my house down. Instead, I'm going to walk over to the grill. I'm going to turn it on. I'm going to wait 3 minutes. I'm going to throw my meat on it. I'm going to cook it for 7 minutes aside. Then I'm going to turn that thing off, close the hood, and not think about it again. And it's going to be easy, and it's going to be good, and there's going to be a thermometer right there and a light right there. Yeah, I know, Charcoal Nation. I just don't get it. Yeah, I don't. That's my whole point. I don't. It's so much easier. So I'm going to go gas all day long, Schaefer. Gas over charcoal, and I've lived both lives. I definitely used to be that charcoal guy, and it never went as well. And plus, what about all the cold spots? You don't get a consistent cook. Yeah, you would, Rome, if you built your pyramid correctly. Johnny Scabs is in. Quote, David Eckstein was an exhilarating player. Signed vanilla ice cream, the missionary position, and plain hot dogs. All right, so why are we talking about Eckstein? First of all, he was a great player. I used to love having him on the show. And yes, I liked watching him play. It came up because Adrian Gonzalez, when I asked him if he liked watching baseball today, he said, not really. And part of the reason for that is the game is not the game that I used to know and the game that I used to play. And then he went back to one of his favorite teammates, David Eckstein, and said a guy like that would not even get a look in today's game.
No, he wouldn't get a look because he wasn't a high on-base percentage guy. He wasn't a high slug guy. He put the ball on the ground. He was trying to hit the ball on the ground. He bunted a ton. He went deep into counts quite a bit. But I will tell you this, when I was in San Diego, the year I drove in, I think 119, I would credit him to about 70 of those RBIs, or 80 maybe. Because if there was a guy on base, he would make sure they would get to second or third base, and that would come up to hit after that. And, you know, that year we won 90 games. And for a team that didn't have a ton of talent, we weren't expected to win. But he did all the little things to help us win. This is the player he was, unselfish, put it all out there, and put it all out there for his teammates, not for himself.
Adrian Gonzalez, episode 164 of the Jim Rome podcast. That is live, so look for that this weekend, if you would. Do not hang up. This is not the last thing I'm doing. I want to get Alvy's week that was in, but if you're on hold, stay there because I'm going to have time for telephone calls on the other end of that. But Alvin, I want to make sure we get to your stuff, so let's do it right now. Welcome to the jungle. What's going on? My name is Jim Rome. A very good Monday to you. So how you living? How was that weekend? Nice to have you here. So what did you get into this weekend? What did you do? What did you see? What did you watch? What do you want to bring to it? Step it up.
Step your game up.
Why don't we start in the city of champions? After all, I'm right down the road.
Yeah! What does it mean to win here?
Didn't hit me till just now.
Yeah, boy. And that's why Aaron Rodgers dropped that city of champions gloss, because Max dropped it in that Greenside interview.
City of champions.
KJ Wright. One thing you never do is talk about another man's money. So I'm going to talk about another man's money. Would you be willing to give them a hometown discount?
No, man, I do way too much on the football field to take a discount. That makes absolutely no sense.
Holy crap. Blades was out before he hit the canvas. I thought that he had left not only the building, but the entire planet.
He could turn into Undertaker.
I guess anything is possible. Anything except dude waking up from that shot. Rick Barnes joining us. What separates a guy who always wins from others who think they work hard and would consider themselves winners?
Now, that's a great question, because I tell you what, that's the hardest thing. When you're recruiting a guy, it's hard to tell him, hey, you're lazy, you don't play hard enough.
His English suddenly got better.
Again, bad enough to think it, but even worse to say it. Your room. Your room is not the Rotary Club, dummy.
Seen my big tummy out there.
See my big tummy out there. This big tummy's full.
Check and see if your cabin was still standing, because you probably don't understand how cold it gets.
Email.
Those fat asses only helping their neighbors because they expect food in return. Unwar type 2 diabetes.
Diabetes.
Kenny Moore the second. We talked about the fact that you were not named to the Pro Bowl.
You know, it doesn't sit right.
That's not right.
Whenever I get home, you know, I lay my head on the pillow at night. I don't think it's right. It's not okay. You're right.
Losing last night was not a backbreaker. There is no reason to smash the panic button yet, Laker fan. But if I were you, I would know where it is. Especially since Utah is looking to break your dude's faces tomorrow night.
Are you in bed right now?
Dan Wojcicki.
I'll be on the couch or something like that. And you get a little nervous that you're going to get caught in an embarrassing, not like a compromising, like, you know, tubing situation, but like something where you're just going to look stupid.
I want to find the guy who thought this whole thing up. Stand him in front of the plate. Give him hardest fastball I can and hit him right in his knucklehead.
Kenny Drake's my guest.
But I've always had a love for outer space, soaking knowledge of people that are literally out of this world.
Leonard Hamilton, my guest.
I'm a proponent of doing something substantial. And right now, when I look around and see a lot of our politicians saying, there's no problems in our society, everything's fine. Well, we got a problem.
Tiger Woods has been injured.
Over the past 14 months, we've had a lot of reminders of how life can change in an instant. And this is yet another. So here's hoping that Tiger recovers as quickly and as soundly as possible. And not so he can make a return to the tour, but for his family and for him personally. My moniker is Van Smack. But time and place, right? If you want to talk some smack, that's fine. But I'm not going to go with this garbage I'm seeing on Twitter. I'm only going with the facts. I'm only going with what we know. And most of all, you want to treat it with respect. He is Michael Malone. What's it mean to the rest of the team when your best player is modeling that level of work ethic?
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up, Jim. Not only a great point, but a really important point. And I think it comes down to just a commitment to himself, to his teammate, and the organization.
Your beef segment.
And there's Danny again doing his Peloton. I don't care if you exercise, bro. Stop
telling me about it.
Read a manual, you idiots.
Nick Fallow's got bats in the cave.
My beef is still with microwave popcorn.
Half Swedish, half German, and 9 years younger than that 43-year-old piece of rat vomit.
Hello, newsflash. You got an apartment that allows dogs.
Well done.
Dan Wetzel.
Gets to an existential question. Is a taco a sandwich? And then here's another one. Is a hot dog a taco? There's a lot going on here, Jim, that not everyone in the country's aware of.
Catches every ball thrown in his general direction. Man, that takes me back. Such good times, such good memories. Don't get so caught up in the genius of that song that you miss the genius of his takes.
Because Frank Vogel sucks. Frank Vogel is just one of LeBron's puppets, and Martin Gasol looks like he should be playing in the community rec league.
That's a damn terrible phone call, and he's a damn good coach. Hey, Gavin.
Hey, John.
You know what sucks?
What?
That call. Josh Heupel.
Some dead time before they have to go to class. You know, so we have a little dodgeball tournament. I think it's important that your players have fun, and they get to know us as a staff.
I had a ball.
Fred Warner joining me for a few more moments.
The thing with Jimmy is he's our guy. The arm talent is there. Everything that you want in a franchise quarterback is there. So we're going to continue to ride with him.
Push that big rectangle box into your VCR. Sit down in your dirty recliner and watch your match rewind.
You want to talk about a jungle bounce back? This kid was getting murdered yesterday. Today, he runs the jungle.
Dude, give that guy a golden doodle. Doogie Wowzer, MC, Mad Clone, welcome to the jungle. I'm probably old enough to be Rich Father.
I don't get a lot of response, and I'm just having a little bit of trouble.
Hey, Luke, really quickly, what's your middle name?
Pearl.
What's your middle name?
Good catching up with you as well.
Weak take late.
This is not a cafeteria.
The dude I know.
Panda Express.
Maybe hire the guy from the Micro Machine.
I just got some data.
Take that for data.
Always a pleasure, Jim.
One of the great moments.
Lost electrical object.
Maybe we can have three stashes.
All right.
Thank you.
Good night.
All right.
No.
All right. Alvin DeLauro with the week that was. Good job, Alvy. I promised a call on the back end. I will give you a call on the back end. Let's go to Southeast Wisco. Chris. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, Jim, what's going on, buddy?
What's up with you?
Hey, listen, man, I'm fresh off a double shift at work, and then I went straight to the gym. As per usual, the boys and I demanded they turn the satellite radio station to your show. I heard you had a last-minute interview cancellation and needed a third segment guest. Normally, I wouldn't make this offer due to Friday being me time. I'm not some rando Wisco Northwoods dude that lives close by your summer mega mansion. Which, by the way, I thought it was a very legit and sincere offer by my Badger brother to check on your crib. So I thought to myself, what would I do for Jim? Would I check on his summer crib, hop in my S63 AMG Benzo, drive 4 hours north to see if the house pipes were frozen? No way, dude. Maybe for Riri or Beyonce, but then again, who wouldn't? So I'm sure you get why that would have been a firm no from me. Just be thankful it wasn't Benny and Wisco making that offer. Once inside, he would have thrown a rager with all his buddies. He would have arrived back in Wisco this summer to a crib with the pungent odor of cheap weed, half-eaten moldy pizza slices, empty beer cans, and lung dart. Carpet burns everywhere. The mansion would have been trashed. Instead, my offer to you is this, Jim. I will allow you to interview me and save your third segment. You heard it right, Jim. I'm willing to sacrifice my time on a Friday just for the good of the show. My credentials are strong and well-known, but I'll recap briefly for the benefit of new listeners. I'm the only non-celebrity golden ticket holder in 2021. I got dozens of rack calls, and I didn't run and hide after ripping my invite to Smack Off 27 in late June of last year. I keep calling with fire sports takes and destroying clones that deserved it along the way. And lastly, Jim, most importantly, my Jungle Rookie of the Year trophy, which I display proudly in my living room, was shipped directly to my crib courtesy of the CBS sports execs. So just this one time, Jim, I can do you this favor. You're my bro. But next time, it's going to cost CBS some coin. Certainly, if you guys pay the flight deck, you can scratch me out a check, too. So let's get it, Jim. Ask away, buddy.
My man, rack him. Not today, Chris. You know what he's like? He's like a Midwest Jeff in Richmond, giving himself all that shine, taking credit, letting us know he's got an S63, and he's not going to point that S63 in the direction of my mansion, quote unquote. However, if it were Riri or Beyonce, he would, but not me. But he felt like his brethren made a legitimate offer to me. Oh, I know, for sure. That guy who called earlier in the week who said, I'm headed north. I will check on your cabin for you, Rome. I don't think you understand how cold it gets here in the wintertime. And when it gets cold, pipes burst. And when pipes burst, you got yourself a real problem, Cali native. I know. I do know this. Chris in Southeast Wisco gets racked again. He is the closest thing to a sure thing. The closest thing to a lock. The guy gets racked every single time he calls. So, no, he didn't get the Q&A, but he did get racked, and that's how he closed it out. My thanks to Chris, Jim Trotter, Fred Warner, way back in hour number one. Again, check out the rest of the Adrian Gonzalez podcast. It's episode 164. Look for that this weekend. It is live right now. My thanks to the XR4TI. Have a great weekend. See you Monday. We're out.